Well, and as they're heading out, I'm going to ask the ushers to come forward and pass out the little sheets. I gave them quite a duty this morning. They had to hand out two sheets this morning. So you should get an orange one, and I think the other color is, what color is that? Yellow. So you should have two of those sheets this morning, and I'm going to grab less this morning, grab one of those orange sheets. So the first thing that you should do is make sure you take a look at this one. This orange sheet, as you kind of, I should have the other one too. You know what? Yeah, thank you. The yellow one, starts with the yellow one first. So on the yellow one, you'll see in the title, it says, belonging to the MCRC community. Some of you maybe have seen that when you're just beginning to go through kind of the process of becoming members. Maybe others have seen this for the first time. It was at a recent council meeting and Catalyst meetings where I passed this out and said, this is the document that we kind of look at sometimes when we're starting to think about membership. And we kind of went through it. And the cool part was at the end of that meeting, so many of the council members in Catalyst says, you know what? This was really good for us to look at and be reminded of, because, you know, sometimes we just kind of forget what it means to belong to the church community. I think that maybe you should pass this out to everybody. I said, I think that's a great idea. So here it is. And my hope is that as you take a look at it, it doesn't matter where you are in terms of like a membership. The point is to ask yourself, how am I doing? And what does it mean to belong to the community of Christ, and in particular, the community here? There's so many different options and many ways for us to belong. Now, as you look through that sheet, guess what you think is the hardest one on there to preach about? Certainly, all of them aren't easy, but I think there's one that is, at least for this pastor, probably one of the most difficult ones to preach about. It's the third bullet point on the second column, or the first column that says, share fully in the life of MCRC. The third bullet point says, faithfully give back a portion of the gifts God has given me. Now, why do you think it's hard to talk about money? I don't know about you. Did you grow up in a home that talked about money at all? Did you know how much your folks made? Did you know how much your folks gave? Did you know how much was in the bank account? Now, I would dare say that for many of you, money was the word I think of as verboten to talk about. You just, that thing just didn't happen. It doesn't rise to the surface. You just don't talk about money. So it's somewhat hard then to start here on a first Sunday of a new year and you kind of just go, what, Pastor Tim is going to talk about money? Well, in some ways, this is a perfect time, isn't it, to talk about money? Because I don't know about you, I'm not super into New Year's resolutions, but we often begin a new year to kind of set the course anew, to think about goals, think about strategies, think about what's to come, maybe setting up even when you're going to have a vacation in the summer, maybe even thinking about budgeting for how are you hoping to have a vacation and what does that vacation look like. The range goes on. In some ways, it's a perfect time to talk about money on the very first Sunday of the new year. But on the other hand, it's probably a really poor time to talk about money because some of you probably just got done with a season of gift giving and your bank accounts find themselves quite low and in need of replenishment. And on top of that, some of you maybe were really faithful in year-end giving. And again, you're finding yourselves, Pastor Tim, we don't need to hear a sermon on giving. Poor timing, Pastor Tim. Oh, but on the other hand, how many hands do you have, right? On the other hand, this is a wonderful time to talk about money because just think back about the month of giving here in our church. I still am just overwhelmed when I, on two different occasions, saw the bulletin and saw how much we gave just in the Thanksgiving offering this past year, $53,000. Bless you. And so, in some ways, it's a perfect time to talk about money because you're doing so well. So, it's like, this is just a way to encourage you and say, great job. And then the giving that took place when we brought food for Love Inc. and the Three Forks Food Ministry. It's easy to talk about it when people are doing well with this, so great timing, Pastor Tim. I don't know whatever you're thinking about in terms of whether it's a poor or good timing, but here's the reality. I have heard people say from some churches, oh, it's so hard for me because I feel like every other Sunday, the pastor's asking for money. I've heard that. And I think, yeah, some of you heard this text and you go, this is why we don't talk about money, Pastor Tim. Haven't you read Matthew chapter 6, verse 3? Matthew chapter 6, verse 3 says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, period. End of story. Stop the sermon. We don't need to hear it anymore. I've heard that text quoted ad nauseum. We don't want to be a church, of course, that's constantly asking for money. But on the other hand, here we go again. Let's just say that I had this beautiful orchid in front of you here today. And you can just envision it. And I come up to you and I say, let's talk today about the care of an orchid. The first thing you have to make sure is that it has the right nutrients and the right soil and the right sunlight and the right heat. This is how you care for an orchid. And we move on. Does anybody find a little bit of my explanation lacking? What's lacking? What did I not talk about? Thank you. I never talked about water. One of the fundamental ingredients of how to make sure that a plant, an orchid, grows and survives is to talk about water. And so if I would just kind of like, let's just not talk about water, I would be missing out on challenging you and helping you understand how to care well for an orchid. And so it is the exact same way with caring for our spiritual well-being, our life. And I, as a pastor, am called to do whatever I can in the strength that God provides and the wisdom He gives by the Spirit to shepherd you well. And if I would just say, I'm never going to talk about money, it would be as if I was trying to tell you about caring for an orchid without ever talking about water. So I think it is critical every now and then that we stop and pause and ask the question, God, what is it that you are teaching us about money? And you know, it's interesting. Like, just as it is with an orchid, orchids need water. They need the right amount, and in particular orchids, not too much. I mean, you know probably far more about that than I do. The reality is that Scripture is filled with conversation about money. And then for us to just say, well, you know, well, let's just kind of leave it as that verse. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. Giving is private. Let's just not talk about it. We will miss the reality that God in His Word and His providence says, no, money does matter. There are all kinds of money matters in the Bible. So if you have your outlines, you can see the blanks that I left for you. If you were to guess, how many of Jesus' 38 parables talk about money? Would you have guessed that almost half of them? 16. 16 of the 38 talk somewhat about money and or possessions. Some have taken the time to try to calculate how many verses in the Bible talk about money. Any guesses? Some say nearly 2,000 passages talk about money. Well, it's hard to really kind of put that in context. Guess how many passages in the Bible talk about prayer? More or less? Well, significantly less. Prayers talked and mentioned about probably somewhere around the 500 times. Now, just because it says this many times in the Bible and not that many times isn't a really good way to determine whether it's important, but it does at least say that God is very interested in how we think about, how we use, how we act around money. It's critical. It's part of how do we live out a life of faith. And when we think then of the text from Matthew chapter 16, we really find that this is a heart check matter. And just imagine if you'd go to the doctor and the doctor would, in your physical, like, kind of just look you over and never once pull out a stethoscope to check your heart. You'd like, you're forgetting something. Let's just say that our talk today, our discussion and our topic of thinking about money is a way to do a heart check, because here is what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust don't destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. Say with the last verse with me, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is a heart check. This is a time to just stop and say, how is my heart doing? On where is it placing my treasure? And so I hope that you hear all of what comes next from that context as a pastor who is seeking to help us do a heart check, from a pastor who wants to care for you completely and not just skip something because maybe it's difficult. When Jesus was challenging the Pharisees, this is what he would say: woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. And that's the fear or the concern, is that we get really good maybe of talking about the veneer, about the things on the outside, but sometimes when we get to these hard questions, and particularly with this one about money, we would rather just kind of pass it by. And Jesus says, don't get just good with the things on the outside. Think about the heart. And when he talked about the things of the heart, the cleaning of the inside, look what he points out. Greed and self-indulgence. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be. So it's in that desire that what you're going to hear next comes from your pastor. I want to begin by just, again, setting the groundwork for what I would call the whole way of thinking about giving. And this groundwork has two main principles. And those principles, I didn't even put blanks in your text or in your outlines. I just want these to be landing somewhere. Two main principles. First principle is God owns everything. And we all can say, of course he does. We know that. But unless we think about that, understand that, and reiterate it, we will miss what's to come next. God owns everything. Genesis 1 starts off, in the beginning, God. Before anything, God. And then God made all there is. And that's where Psalm 24, which I read earlier, comes from. The earth is the Lord's, and everything in it. The world and all who live in it. For he founded it upon the seas, and he established it upon the waters. God owns everything. All belongs to him. And if you've ever been in any of my premarital classes, and when I talk about stewardship, it's this verse that I say, this is one of my classic, I think the thing that just lands deeply is this verse, which says, every animal of the forest is mine. All the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird in the mountains and the creatures of the field are mine. God owns it all. It all belongs to him. So when we come to terms with that deep fundamental truth, the next statement is self-evident. If it all belongs to God, anything we do have, we are managers of. That's what God is saying. And then when Jesus would again teach in one of his 16 parables on money, this is how he would speak about us being managers. He says again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. God owns it all, and God in his kindness and grace allows us to have anything that we have. And so what we have doesn't belong to us, but it is entrusted to us. We become the managers of God's assets. We become managers of all God has made. And what an, just let that settle in your heart for a while. Small little human me is called to manage anything of God's? Yeah, we are. And so the question is not if we're managers, but what kind of managers are we? As I grew up, I every time we got done singing, or after every time we had an offering, we would always sing this following song. And you know, when you're growing up, you kind of get just like tired of the repetition. Like, oh my goodness, please, can we not sing that song again? But we would, Sunday after Sunday. Now here I am, nearly 55, and that song is still like stuck in my brain. And you know what? I think for really good reasons, because this is the verse, and it goes something like this. We give thee but thine own, whate'er the gift may be, all that we have is thine alone, our trust, O Lord, from thee. And we would sing it every Sunday, right after the offering was taken. And now I look back and go, those are really good words. I didn't maybe see it at the time, but it puts it all in one package. In our giving, we give thee back to God what is his, because it's yours alone. It's only a trust. We're just managers of that. There's the groundwork. God owns everything, and we are managers. But if we're managers, the question I think we should ask ourselves is then, why give? What is the point of that? I mean, God owns all the cattle on a thousand hills, but why is it that I have to be involved in this process? Well, the fundamental reason why we give, honestly, it goes back all the way to Deuteronomy 26, and you could probably even go back even to Genesis chapter 3, but it's Deuteronomy chapter 26, and if you would turn your Bibles there, you will see how two things kind of merge together in this text. Deuteronomy chapter 26, beginning of verse 1, when you have entered the land the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance, and take possession of it and settled in it. What is the very next thing? Take some of the first fruits of all you produce from the soil of the land the Lord your God has given you and put them in a basket. And then go to the place the Lord your God will choose as the dwelling for his name, and say to the priests in office at the time, I declare today to the Lord your God that I have come to the land the Lord swore to your forefathers to give. The priest shall take the basket from your hands and set it down in front of the altar of the Lord your God. Then you shall declare before the Lord your God. And here's like this confession, this declaration of the person. My father was a wandering Armenian, and he went down into Egypt with a few people and lived there and became a great nation, powerful and numerous. But the Egyptians mistreated us and made us suffer, putting us to hard labor. And then we cried out to the Lord, the God of our fathers, and the Lord heard our voice and saw our misery, our toil and oppression. So the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. With great terror and with miraculous signs and wonders, he brought us to this place and he gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now I bring the first fruits of the soil that you, O Lord, have given me. Here's the principle that is taught all the way back to this text. Giving always ought to be part of our response to the amazing gift of grace. For the Old Testament Israelites, their response of giving was seeing that they had been released from captivity. They had been released from slavery. And now as they get into this land flowing with milk and honey, their giving is to look back and say, God, thank you for what you have done. In the New Testament, Paul over and over again is pointing back to that Egyptian slavery as a reminder of that's how we have been enslaved in sin. And God, through his Son Jesus Christ, released us from that slavery. And then so too, we ought, just like the Old Testament Israelites, be faithful in our giving as a response to what God has given to us. I don't know if you've heard the latest, I wouldn't say fad because I can't tell if it's a fad yet, but there's a new test going around, they say, that really will indicate your potential for longevity of health. Those who are in the suicide crazy chemi class in the morning, I mean, the early class that begins working out way too early in the morning will know the answer to this question. It's the grip test. How long can you hold yourself up? How long is your grip? And that's a big indicator, they're saying, on longevity of life. What if the grip test for spiritual health is how tightly you hold on to the gifts that God has given you? And unlike the health tech, the better the grip, the longer your life. In this case, the tighter you grip to earthly possessions, the more unhealthy your spiritual heart. How tightly are you holding on? How are you responding to the gift of grace? But then the second part is this, that giving is part of God's call to be rich in good deeds. And now maybe you can hear a little bit of where I began the morning service with Matthew chapter 5, to being salt and light in the world, to be those who are rich in good deeds. And this just comes straight from the text, from 1 Timothy chapter 6. And this is how Paul would write, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, which richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Again, who owns it all? God. And he blesses us to be managers and, in fact, even give things for our deep and wonderful enjoyment. And then he goes on. Command them to do good. And what is that goodness? To be rich in good deeds. What are the good deeds? To be generous and willing to share. And in this way, they will lay up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may not take hold, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Check your grip. Are you holding too tightly? And then, are you rich in good deeds? And here's what I would, This is where it's so hard in some ways to talk about money, because there are people here today, and I know you, and I've been blessed by you, and you have blessed this church by your generosity. You have patterned your life after giving, and how I would love to be able to maybe like stand you behind the curtain, like with a voice that you didn't recognize, and have them tell you the joy of what it is to give. Because they would never be willing to do it because they were too humble. But I've watched you. I've seen you. And I've been recipients of that. People who give and give generously and give from the heart. Well done. How I wish I could have you up here and just commend you and challenge all of us to give the way you give. So again, why do we give? A response to the grace we've been given. Why do we give? Because this is God's call, his command to be rich in good deeds. So then the next question is, then how do we give? And really, this verse, we could have just taken this verse, read it four times and said amen and headed home. Because this like puts it all in a beautiful nutshell. Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. How do we give? This way. A true Christian's giving is heart-driven, generous, sacrificial, and grace-motivated. That's it. Give generously. Give cheerfully. Don't give because you feel under compulsion to do, because the reality is shame and guilt and compulsion, they have no place in the house of God. There should never be a place where that is the thing that causes somebody to give. It has to be heart-driven. Back in Exodus, as they were building the temple, the process was to call the people of Israel to give, to enable the building to occur. And look at how Moses writes about this. And this is what he says. And they came, and note what he says, everyone whose heart stirred him, everyone whose spirit moved him, and brought the Lord's contribution to be used for the tent of meeting and for all its service and for the holy garments. There wasn't a call to say, and thou shalt do this. The call was, if God is moving and stirring your heart, come and give. If you find yourself blessed because God has released you from the slavery of Egypt, come and give. If you have been blessed by people in Egypt even giving you the earrings that you have in your possession, with a heart that's stirred, come and give. But this brings us back to that Matthew text that I talked about earlier. And you're welcome again to turn here, Matthew chapter 6. Because this is the text where it says, where Jesus says, don't let the left hand know what the right hand is doing. And I just want to cut to the chase. Any idea that all giving should be ultimately secret, 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 is a misuse of this text. Let's look. Jesus says, be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men to be seen by them. If you do, you'll have no reward from your Father in heaven. That is critical first starting point of that text to understand where Jesus is going to go. So when you give to the needy, don't announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by men. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, note the context. Do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, that your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. What is Jesus driving at? His concern is not so that nobody forever would know anything about what I get. And we shouldn't even talk about money. That's not the point. The point is, the Pharisees would come with their cash in hand, come up to the needy and say, "Hey, everybody, take a look over here. Look what I'm doing. I'm giving to the needy. Oh, hey, come over here. Play the trumpets. I just gave some money to the temple." The whole point of giving was corrupt. Their giving was to receive accolations and adoration from people and not from their God. Jesus' point is not that we don't ever talk about money, but he drives at the heart motive. Why are you giving? It's not so that we don't talk about money. As one person said, the tragic irony for these people is that in their giving in that way, they had received their reward. The reward, what was their reward? The adulations of the people. They got it. That's all they're going to get. But one who gives from a generous, sacrificial heart, the reward comes from our God. So the question is, and I still have kind of left this one unanswered, so how much do you give? Some will know that the Old Testament concept all was centered around the tithe. And that verse comes here from Leviticus chapter 27, where it says, "A tithe of everything from the land, whether grain from the soil or fruit from the trees, belongs to the Lord. It is holy to the Lord." There's a couple other times where tithe comes up, but this is the kind of where the concept comes to be. The word tithe is just another word for tenth. The call upon the Israelites was to give a tenth of their crops, a tenth of their animals, a tenth of their possessions back to God, the tithe. So is that what Jesus said? Is that the call of the New Testament? That we should be giving a tenth of what we have? Well, when Jesus was talking to the Pharisees, it's very interesting that he very much understands the concept of tithe. In fact, it was very much part of the life and culture of the Israelites at that time. But it's instructive what he doesn't say when he talks about this. Here's the text. "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites, you give a tenth," you could move that word to be tithe, "of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat, but you swallow a camel." What is Jesus' point? He doesn't go on to simply reiterate, "and thou shalt give a tenth." What does he reiterate? The heart. Do you see this? His point is, your giving has to start with a full-orb sense of doing the will of God, which includes justice, mercy, and faithfulness. And if only thing you're interested in is giving a tenth, you've missed the whole point of why I'm asking you to give. Because God is interested in heart motives. The entirety of the New Testament does not reiterate what the Old Testament has about giving 10%. And I love what some people have said then. That Jesus wasn't interested in a particular percentage. He was interested in your heart. He was interested in how you are seeing the gifts of God that God has given you to manage. I think about this. You know, it was, like I said, a few weeks ago, where we had the wonderful opportunity to give of soup and toilet paper and all kinds of things for Love Inc. and for the food bank. Walk with me here. If I said to you, next Sunday, all of you need to bring 4 cans of soup for the Three Forks Food Bank, what would you likely do? You probably would bring 4 cans. But what did the deacons do when they asked us? Give generously. Here's ideas. And what did you do? You blew the doors off of pickup trucks and trailers, and you filled them up completely because it wasn't this specific, and thou shalt do 4 cans. And you all went, and you did 4 cans. This is what Jesus is getting at when you look at the text. The point is not, and thou shalt give 10%. God is saying, no, look at the abundance of what you have, and out of that abundance, come to terms with where your heart is, and then give accordingly. And for some, 10% is a starting point, and not a ceiling. Like 4 cans is not a starting point. It's like, come and bring a case, because you can do that. We talk at the deacon's level, and sometimes they say, if we would come and we say, and every person ought to give $400 a person per month to the general offering. Here's a couple things that could happen. One is some will give 400 and there's it. Ceiling. That's it. I'm going to give that far. You could give way more than that. But here's the other part of that. And I'll say this from a family who was this way growing up. We had no money. Zero. None. I was a family who would stand in line for government-given cheese and flour. I came from a family that waited to get a Social Security check. We had nothing. We lived in an FHA home. If the pastor starts off a sermon about giving and says, you thou shalt give $400. What has he done? He's taken a weight and dropped it on the shoulders of people. And then has moved that into an act of compulsion and weight, and you're left with guilt and it just this whole mess. And Jesus just runs right past this. That's not the point. The point is, look at what God's blessed you with. And then give accordingly, rather than coming with a certain percentage. Some might find it helpful to have the word 10% as the starting point. Wonderful if that helps give you a guidance. But here's the gift, is that for some, and I praise the Lord, that for my family, as I watched my family grow and then at points and finally came to the point where God had blessed them more, all of a sudden they're like, wow, we now have the opportunity to give. Giving ought not to be a weight, nor ought it to be 10% ceiling. And just think about this. Sorry, I went backwards here. If I were to say to you, give a tenth, some of you here, I know you well, will say this. A tenth of what, Pastor Tim? My gross or my net? Or a tenth of how much my farm produced over the course of the year? Or a tenth of my 401k? You would come up with every possible way around trying to understand the tenth. True? Don't look at the tenth. Look at your heart. Look at what God has blessed you with and give accordingly. So here's some practical guidance. Imagine if I said this morning. I am going to say it. So what we're going to do practically is next week, the deacons are going to set up a booth in the fellowship hall right after the service, okay? And you can all come with your bank accounts, your W-2 statements, and you can sit down with a deacon for a spiritual checkup. What if I was actually truthfully saying that? Some of you, internally, I don't know, you can figure out what you just did inside your heart. But some, maybe like, I'm not going to go to that table. I don't want anyone to know what I give. Okay, so the deacons aren't going to do that. But something happened in your heart when I did say that. And it's that place where you have to check this morning. What transpired when I said that? Because your bank accounts and your W-2 and your credit card statements all are saying something about what God has blessed you with and how you're giving. But maybe it's this. Y'all have maybe somebody here in the congregation or someone that you know who kind of has a sense of how much you make over the course of the year. They probably don't know exactly, but they have a sense. Imagine if you sit down with that person and then just hand them your giving statement for last year. What would they say about your generosity? Now, of course, you don't have to do this, but it's having you ask the question. And that's my first part of the practical guidance, to sit back and take stock of what you've given over 2025 and ask yourself, okay, have I given out of abundance? Or have I given out of compulsion to a certain percentage, or have I not even given at all? And that's what's the interesting part about giving. Nobody knows, or very few people. And so you can get away with it real easy. That's why it's a heart thing. A check. If you're married, sit down with your spouse this week. Look over your giving records and say to each other, okay, have we given out of abundance? Have we been generous? If you're single, grab your W-2 and look at what you have made and ask the question, how has God blessed me? And how have I given accordingly? And maybe even come and talk to maybe someone older than you and ask them, how did they approach giving? And parents, please teach your children how to give. Maybe help them put in money in the basket or at the door. Or talk to them during the week when you're maybe writing the check or putting the numbers in online. Whatever it may be, help them to see what you do and how you do it. Model it for them so that when they get of old, it's not like this big open, like, I have no idea. This is part of training them as well. Help them to know. I was talking to someone recently about end-of-life giving. Have you ever talked and thought about end-of-life giving, of putting in your will a contribution to the church? So often we will give and bless the Lord to a mission agency or other areas, and that's wonderful. But you ever thought about an end-of-life contribution to your local church? Ponder that. So lastly, and I've said it all along this morning, and you have blanks that are left to be filled, it's just this. Just give generously. Not going to talk about percentage. There will be always a loophole. Just look at what God's blessed you with, and then give accordingly. Because in the end, the deacons, as well as me, as your pastor, wants this for all of you, that we would just grow in grace. And that growth in grace is included in how we give. So may we be cheerful, generous givers.